Welcome to Radio Rev, podcasting from the heart of healthcare in Minneapolis, Minnesota. This is the podcast for changemakers looking to do more than just health engagement. It's about getting people to take action and do things that actually improve their health. It's a radical idea, right? So we're talking to the leaders, innovators, movers, and shakers who are bringing new ideas, inspiring others, and leading the way.
Today, Revel CEO Jeff Fritz is talking with Vicky Coulard, Executive Director at Vail Place, a Minnesota organization that provides community-based mental health programs. We sat down with Vicky last year for an interview during Mental Health Month called The Importance of Mental Health Programs in Driving Behavioral Health Engagement. And now we're back a year later to talk about how things have changed and where we're headed. Welcome to the show.
Thanks,
Jen.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's such a pleasure to talk to you again, Vicky. Beautiful summer day in Minnesota, and it sounds like the crazy summer schedule for Vail Place has begun.
It has. This is a busy time for our agency, but I'm excited to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We may have done this last time, but we can repeat it, or if you have a new one, we like to throw in a little bit of music connection to the person that's our guest today. So can you share with us a favorite 80s song?
80s song. Mm-hmm. Okay. So many things pop through my mind. I'm going to embarrass myself with this. Donnie Marie Osmond, they had a song, a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll, that would describe me. So I would say, probably Def Leppard and Pour a Little Sugar on Me.
Def Leppard, okay. I love it. I love it. That's early Def Leppard. That's solid 80s
Def
Leppard.
That is. Yes, it is. That's classic stuff there.
I thought you were going to go with Donnie Marie Osmond. I was going to say maybe the 70s. I don't know.
Right?
But that's
and then
great.
You were rethinking this.
Def Leppard is awesome. Fun fact, that was my first LP that I purchased with my own money.
Was it really?
Uh-huh.
Strong choice, Jeff.
See it. My mother was appalled that I bought that album. So some of the people didn't maybe hear our prior podcast, so maybe you could just do a little brief introduction of the work you're doing with Vail Place and why community programs in general are so important to people with mental illness.
Sure, of course. So first I'll talk about Vail Place. So Vail Place started, 38 years ago as a clubhouse. A lot of people aren't familiar with that program, but it's this really incredible integrated program that addresses both the symptoms of mental health and mental illness, as well as addresses all those social determinants that we all need to live healthy, fulfilling lives. So everything from helping people find employment to housing, reducing isolation, teaching people the skills that they need to live in the community. So, how to shop, how to take the bus, all the things that we need. And I think that, from there, Vail Place has grown over the years. We provide a kind of a whole spectrum of services that kind of cover the intensity of people's needs in the community. And I would say that the philosophy of Clubhouse has really kind of set the stage for how we approach our work. We believe in people's, self-determination and self-advocacy. We believe in their ability to recover and very person-centered. So, this is a model that's, 70 years old. And so before person-centered became a term that everybody was talking about, Vail Place was doing it is through our clubhouse model. And I think that philosophy runs through all of our programs. And it really supports our mission and the work that we do every day. And I think it kind of helps create the culture that we have at our agency. And so I will do a little plug and just add that Vail Place was nominated as a top 150 workplace this year for the first time, which we're excited about. But I think it just speaks, thank you. But I think it speaks to the level of commitment that, you know, our staff and other people feel about community resources and how important they are. You know, when somebody sees their therapist or psychiatrist, when they walk out that door, they're in the community and it's like, what now? Well, what now is Vail Place and other community providers. We pick up at that point and ensure that people are stable in the community. So kind of a brief kind of overview, but I hope that gives a sense of the importance of what community providers provide.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thank you for that. And it's the reading that we've been doing around mental health, it seems like it's becoming more of a norm to talk about mental health problems, and people are being encouraged to get more and more vulnerable. I'm wondering if you have some thoughts around how we continue to create safe spaces to have these discussions around mental health in our communities.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you mentioned kind of at the start of our conversation an article that you had read in NAMI's national newsletter. You know, and I think I may have seen that same article, and they talk about kind of the seven types of stigma, from, you know, public to perceived to personal. Mm-hmm. But at the core, at the center of all of that is really education. I think making sure that people truly understand mental health and what that means. And I think the fact that we're talking about physical and mental health now together, I think has also broken down a lot of barriers. But at the center of it, really, I think it's education.
Mm. Are you seeing differences in how that gets tackled from an age standpoint? So are there things happening in our public school system? Are there things happening in the workplace? Are there things happening in that are early signs that we're doing more of that education?
I think one of the, you know, certainly at the school level, we are seeing a lot more conversation about it. I mean, you're seeing students rallying and creating support groups. So I think, you know, I think our culture is changing. I don't know, you know, I'm older than you are, Jeff, but this was not a conversation we had when I was in high school. So I'm excited to see that change. And even in the, I think in the healthcare realm, people are talking about mental health in a way that's healthy and normal and very approachable and very comfortable. So I think, you know, as agencies, we're creating a safe space. I think a lot of employers do the same. You know, they're putting bulletins out, they're creating a space for people to, you know, share their stories. And yet, you know, at the end of the day, does your coworker who is, you know, in the desk next to you, you know, do you feel comfortable sharing your story? And hopefully we'll get to a point where people are comfortable having those conversations.
Yeah, it seems just so front and center to an evolving conversation that's happening in our business, and the strategies that are being tried to unlock just the education and talking about it seem to be on point with what we're seeing. So it seems like from some of the notes that I've been seeing is the mental health resources have continued to decline. And they're down to one therapist for every 100,000 people. How do you see the industry, and maybe, you know, Vail Place is one of those places that is responding to the decline in providers?
So Vail Place does not provide therapy, and we do not have psychiatrists. Mm. But I do have a couple thoughts around that. Virtually, you know, we're seeing more and more people being able to access psychiatry virtually. You know, I think that's so helpful, especially for people who live outstate and they don't have access to an office near them. So we have a number of our members, we call our clients members, who access their therapy, their psychiatry via virtually, via the internet. So it's been incredibly successful. I think we're seeing more of that. And on the flip side, you know, recognizing that shortage, we're also seeing, you know, kind of the three strikes you're out approach that, you know, clinics need to take. And understandably, if somebody isn't able to keep their appointments, you know, after three times, they no longer can see that psychiatrist or see that particular therapist. So I think one of, and that's, you know, you talked initially about the importance of community support programs. And that's one of the things that we do. All of us as providers, we're helping ensure that people get to the clinic, that they see their therapist, they keep the appointments and they're not missing them, so that they're able to maintain that relationship, because it is so hard and it takes so long to get in. The last thing you want anyone to do is to lose that connection because they were, you know, they were unable to make the appointment.
Oh, that's awesome. Around the virtual care and unlocking a whole nother channel for people to receive some of the episodic care that they need. Do you see physicians engaging in this differently? Are they seeing a byproduct of mental health that impacts the general well-being of their patients?
So what we are seeing, I think, you know, we have a partnership with North Memorial Health, and what we're seeing is that how they're engaging in a different way is changing the paradigm from people going into the clinic, but also sending people out. So really leveraging their community paramedics and then social workers and our case managers doing ride-alongs when they do have a client who is struggling with a mental illness or in crisis. So we are seeing a change and a shift, I think, in how people even think about their healthcare and what that looks like for them.
It's super interesting to watch how there's some adaptations, like a ride along that just makes so much sense to me. So when we talked about a year ago, you talked about a few things that I would like to follow up on. One of them is, you had mentioned that primary care people are doing more health risk assessments, but there aren't enough options after the assessment is complete. Have you seen any improvement in the past year on this?
Yeah, so we, you know, I think our partnership, what we're seeing and really appreciate the assessments that clinicians are doing. I think that they have less knowledge about the resources in the community, which is, again, where community providers play such an important role. So I think it's difficult for them to make a referral at times, and there aren't always the resources out there. In particular, I mean, we're certainly seeing, you know, healthcare providers recognizing the importance of those social determinants. So think about housing. I mean, we candidly see probably 70 to 80% of the referrals that we'll receive are people who are currently homeless or it being imminent for them. So I think that, you know, it's hard to think about your healthcare when right now I'm just looking for a place to sleep. So I think that, you know, we're seeing a lot more focused on really recognizing what the social determinants are and the role that community providers can play, because we're the resource in that community. So I think that, you know, clinicians being able to leverage their partners in ways that we can then expand resources is really, it's innovative, and it's a change that we're experiencing more and more.
Mm-hmm. So dust off your crystal ball here. today, as you look into that crystal ball, what do you think mental health care will look like in the next 10 years?
That is a big, big question. From a payment perspective, we're certainly seeing a push to value-based contracting. You know, it's a change. It's something that all of us are having to rethink about, how we're structured, how we deliver services, how we can establish a value for our services. I would say, you know, I think there's a bigger, you know, I've talked about social determinants. I think there's more value around that. And again, you know, it's just, wow, it's such a big question. You know, I think there's so many changes in the industry right now that we're all looking for that crystal ball, not to be quite so opaque. We're looking for a few answers for sure.
Mm-hmm. So just for this push on the social determinants. So it sounds like that's something that has changed over the past year, the view of social determinants or social barriers has gotten more attention, which may be informing your view of the long-term future that, okay, there's some movement here. Is there anything that you see in the near term around social determinants that's exciting you?
Yeah, I think the fact that United Health has set goals around it, I think we're actually seeing people take action and seeing the healthcare industry take action, which is exciting for us, you know, as somebody that's kind of our sweet spot. You know, there's more conversations, certainly nationally, recognition for the value. Oh, that's a tough one, Jeff.
Yeah, well, we're hearing this. We're hearing this. The phrase "social determinants" harden a little bit. I think about a year ago, it was fairly novel, and now I'm starting to hear, as probably you are, some of the more definition around what does that mean? How do we remove it? How do we remove a social determinant that's negative? How does that get funded? Is there government funding? Is there private funding? Is there insurance funding? All of those things are starting to be talked about a lot more this year than they were a year ago.
It's true. It really is. You know, and I think we're exploring more partnerships individually with some healthcare providers and looking at, you know, how can we impact that for some of their higher risk clients? So there is definitely more conversation around that. I think the payment structure is challenging. It's something people haven't thought about, so there's not necessarily a structure for it right now.
So closing up here, what do you think is the most important thing anyone can do that would help spread awareness about mental health?
Great question. Talk about it. Be genuine. Be honest. Listen. Listen when somebody comes to you and they talk about, you know, their story and their family or their sibling or themselves. Be open. But yeah, I think have the conversations. I appreciate the make it okay and some of the different initiatives that are out there that really have raised visibility for just engage in the conversation.
Yeah, it's hard, as you know, we're still so resistant to vulnerability. To open that up, and how do you think social media has impacted that? Has it helped it, or has it become a more curated world where people are less vulnerable?
That's a great question. You know, probably a little bit of both. I think people have access to really some of the exciting things that are happening, and when somebody, you know, has achieved, you know, they've gotten their first house, or they're able to share some of those things. But we're also seeing, you know, people will come in and talk about a news story. They'll talk about seeing something on Facebook, some of the shaming and blaming that happens. I mean, I certainly think that's a dramatic impact for teenagers and other people.
Sure. Well, the work continues, right? And we're lucky to have somebody like you in the community, on the front lines, helping all these people work through these challenges. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And thank you for taking time to talk with me today.
Thanks for joining us for the Radio Rev podcast brought to you by Revel. If you found today's conversation as informative and energizing as we did, please take a moment and subscribe to the podcast. As always, we invite you to learn more about us and check out all of our content at revel-health.com/radiorev.